a woman in the UK who wrote a lot about her personal stories, her personal experiences with dating. It seems like she'd been in the dating scene for a long time, trying to find a partner. And she was laying out this very complicated saga where she was dating a polyamorous guy for the first time. And she never experienced that before. And she also didn't have an interest in polyamory. She was going through a lot of pain. It sounds like he wasn't also great at it necessarily. She was not having a really good time. And I slid into the comments really to say, you probably shouldn't be dating this person.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you want are great, but like, this is not a good non-monogamy experience in general. And clearly it's not going to end the way that you're hoping to, because you're just really in a lot of pain. And she responded saying, yeah, I get what you're saying, but like, I have been lonely for so long. I've just been wanting someone who can touch me and be affectionate with me and go on dates with me. And I've been missing out on that for so long that this feels like it's the best that I got right now. It was really sad to see that.
Yeah.
But I was like, but I get it. If you feel like you don't have a ton of options, but when you're in it, that sense that this is what I got, I would rather lean into that and maybe try to get some of what I need rather than throwing it in the garbage.
Welcome to the Multiamory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
Whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about the sound of settling. Is it a good sound or a bad sound? No, really, we're talking about, is it okay to settle in relationships? What does it even mean to settle in relationships? What are some realistic expectations you can have for relationships? Should we be uncompromising, or do we need to compromise a little bit? Should we hold out for that perfect relationship, or can waiting for perfect keep us from finding good? We're going to explore all of this, looking at both the light side and the shadow side of each of the different stances to give you some things to think about that you can hopefully apply in your own lives. If you're interested in learning about our communication tools that we reference on the show that can help you to achieve better relationship communication, check out our book, Multiamory: Essential Tools for Modern Relationships. It covers our most used communication tools for all types of relationships. You can find links to buy it at multiamory.com/book or wherever fine books are sold.
In doing some of the healing work and processing work from a recent breakup, I realized that all of my mind is a stage and all of
this
the men inside
so
of
much.
Me are players.
Okay. All right.
Okay. See where you're doing.
Starting off more metaphorical than I expected. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, whatever.
This is what I mean by that is, you know, I've identified with my therapist that there's, I want to say 90% of me when it comes to thinking about this breakup, 90% of me feels very resolute and very good about it and knows I did the right thing. And then there's 10% of me that objects, that questions that, that doubts that. And my therapist said it's almost like a Greek chorus situation where you have the very loud and very present main characters that are the subject of your focus, but then you have like the Greek chorus in the background. And for anyone who's not a theater nerd, like the three of us are, a Greek chorus was I guess, this staging device in ancient Greek plays where, yes, you would have your main characters playing out the action, but then there was always this group of people just creeping in the background that had commentary about the action. And sometimes they would be highlighting contrast to the action, or sometimes they would be highlighting the emotional background to the action. Sometimes they would be dropping in some foreboding, you know, foreshadowing about what this might mean. But there's always this commentary that's going on. And that felt like that was what was going on inside me, where I had these main parts of myself reminding myself, yes, this was the right thing to do. You deserve a partner who treats you well. You deserve a relationship that feels good more often than it feels bad. You shouldn't be making excuses for your partner's bad behavior. You know, it was hard for you to uphold your boundaries here, but that's how you choose yourself, prioritize yourself, and love yourself. And then the collection of the Greek chorus in the back saying, oh, but maybe you shouldn't have been so hard on him. Maybe you should have really given him a break. Maybe you were expecting too much. Maybe your standards were too high. And remember, nobody's perfect all the time, including you. And that's been a very disorienting place to be sometimes, having this sense of mostly certainty, but then some of this self-doubt. And I realize that this struggle within myself, I think, echoes what I've seen in this more meta level in the relationship advice space. And I think this is a debate that's been going on for a long time. Essentially, should you temper your expectations of a partner or of a relationship? Should you stop holding out for that perfect person that's just excellent and great? And should you maybe compromise a little bit on what you want? Because love is hard to come by. And sometimes when we have our standards too high, we can be passing perfectly wonderful partnerships by. Or the camp of, no, you shouldn't settle. Like, that's how you end up in all these shitty deadbeat relationships. Like, you really should hold out for a really wonderful partner, a really wonderful relationship. You shouldn't be settling for less. And that debate has been going on for a long time.
This conundrum is the reason why I stayed in my last relationship for as long as I did.
Yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because absolutely, I agree with you that you deserve a relationship that makes you feel more good than bad, and you shouldn't make excuses for bad behavior, or you need to uphold boundaries and deserve a partner that treats you well. But I also knew that on paper and in terms of my life and how big of a change my life would go through if I chose to leave that relationship, that was really challenging. And you know, there's always the price of admission. There are always things that are going to not be perfect about a relationship. And I guess it's just that question, how many of those things are you willing to deal with? And ultimately, is the relationship more of a plus, of a benefit to your life than, I guess, a detriment? Hmm. And that's where I would go in terms of asking, is it okay to quote unquote settle, or is it okay to let this relationship go because it's firmly in a camp of not serving you?
Yeah.
Hmm. I think that the fact that there is this debate and that in the relationship advice space, you could find people very adamantly arguing one side or the other of this goes back to something that I think is even more universal than that when it comes to advice, is realizing that we often have very valuable pieces of advice or little aphorisms in the world that basically mean the opposite thing, but that both can be really helpful and valid in certain situations. And so that's why the way we're exploring this is not saying we've got the answer, but more depending on your situation, a different side of this might be the one that you need to hear. I think kind of the simplest example I like to think of for this is we've heard the phrase, a penny saved is a penny earned. And this is about like, don't spend frivolously, right? If you're saving your money, a penny saved is a penny earned. But we also have the aphorism, you got to spend money to make money, right? Or various things like that.
Which one's real? Which one's true?
Or like, it's more important to do things with your money than to just hold on to it. You can't take it with you, right? We have varying aphorisms kind of on either side of this. And the point is that depending on your situation, one of those might be really helpful for you. Or one that too much agrees with the way you're leaning toward might just push you further into, oh yeah, I'm just being really stubborn on this one side. And so just something I want to put out there when it comes to advice and aphorisms is the one that makes you feel just a little bit uncomfortable, not so much where it's like, this is horrible, that's going to make my life fall apart, but just that little bit, there's something to listen to there. It doesn't mean you have to go completely that direction, but that's telling you I should pay attention to something here.
Yeah. So this whole expectations question, holding out versus settling, is relevant. I found interesting data from a 2023 survey that was conducted by the American Survey Center that not being able to find someone who measures up to somebody's expectations is a common reason that people cite for just not dating. So across the board, 30% of single Americans say that not being able to find someone who meets their expectations is a major reason that they're not dating. And women say this more often than men do. Almost 40% of the surveyed single women, compared to a little less than a quarter of single men, say that an inability to find someone who meets their expectations is one of the major reasons why they're not dating. And this is particularly salient for college-educated women. Almost half of college-educated women say that not being able to find someone who measures up is a major factor. And I mean, there have been think pieces written about this. There have been op-eds written about this, arguing on both sides. You know, some people saying specifically, often this is directed to women, saying, women, you got to stop holding out. There's plenty of great men around you. Really lower your expectations and like find yourself a husband now. You know, as opposed to some people being like, no, like, why would I do that? Why would I settle? Right. So this is something that a lot of people deal with, not just people who are non-monogamous, but people who are traditionally dating as well. So the way that this episode is going to go is I just want to look at each of these two camps. So we're going to look at the camp that argues it's good to compromise here when it comes to seeking a partner. It's good to bring in realistic expectations. We're going to look at the light side of that and also the shadow side of that. And then same thing on the other side. We're going to look at this camp of refusing to settle, of holding out for excellence, and look at the light side and the shadow side of that. And then we'll see if we come to any conclusions at the end of that.
Amazing. Well, let's get into it, but we're going to take a quick break to talk about supporting this show. If you appreciate this content, if you find it valuable, if you like sharing it with people, take a moment to check out our sponsors and use our promo codes, because that is what helps fund us to keep this show going and coming out for free for everyone in the world every week. And of course, you can join more directly by joining our Patreon at multiamory.com/join. You can become a patron there and get access to various perks like our private Discord server, ad-free episodes, our monthly processing groups over video, and more. So thank you so much for your support.
Multiamory is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, some big and some small. And when we keep these stressors bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively and start to affect the way that we show up in our relationships and communicate with our partners. Therapy is a safe space to get things off of your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Yeah, I personally have benefited a lot from therapy various times in my life. And what I like about BetterHelp, and I've used it for a long time, what I like about it is just how easy and convenient it is, as well as how affordable they make it. So you just sign up, fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. And I've actually found that part to be really useful. So over the years, I've had a few different therapists through BetterHelp. And most recently, I had one for about a year, and he was great. But I took a little break, and when I came back to therapy, I just wanted a different perspective. I wanted something else. And so I had it match me with someone, and I got matched with someone based on his profile, and I had like two sessions with him, and we just didn't connect. I got some useful stuff out of it, but it just wasn't quite right. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get someone else. And so I just had it match me, and that time it auto-matched me with someone, and that's who I'm seeing now. And have had some huge breakthroughs already just in 6 weeks or so of working with her. And it's been amazing. So I just really appreciate that feature, because finding the right therapist for you is a big part of it. Not just going to therapy, but finding the right one and making it so easy to rematch with somebody else is just, I love that feature. I think it's a really important and underrated feature.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/multi today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/multi. Support for Multiamory comes from Uber Lube. Lube is the key to maximizing pleasure, whether alone or with a partner. And if you're going to lubricate, which all of you out there definitely should be lubricating, it makes sex so much better. You want to make sure that it is done with the highest quality body-safe ingredients, and nothing beats Uber Lube.
Uber Lube is a luxurious, high-grade silicone lubricant made from clean, body-friendly ingredients. And what makes Uber Lube body-safe is that it is free of nasty additives like parabens, preservatives, and petrochemicals. It stays on the surface of your skin and it does not enter your bloodstream like water-based lube. UberLube is also latex compatible, so it is safe and effective to use with condoms.
So if you want to try out the best quality lube in the world that won't stain your clothing or bedding, right now UberLube is offering Multiamory listeners a special offer, 10% off and free shipping when you use our code MULTIAMORY at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code MULTIAMORY at UberLube.com. As Dedeker mentioned, we're going to start out by looking at the camp of compromise, or maybe rallying behind realism.
Ooh, fun. I like that.
Good alliteration.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find some clever terms for this team, right? This side. This is the one saying, yeah, you're not going to find perfect, so find what's good enough. Mm. You can compromise and find something that's going to be okay. This will be fine. And so I think depending where you fall on this, that might sound horrible to you right now, or that might sound like, yeah, that is what I need to do. And so let's explore this. Let's start off with the light side.
I will say that something that frustrates me, particularly when I'm working with clients who are actively dating, in the dating process, partner seeking, that the landscape is so fraught right now. And I think so many people are so frazzled and burnt out by dating in general, especially if they've been going through a period of going on lots of dates, that sometimes that can perpetuate into this cycle of where you get burnt enough and then you raise your standards high enough where it's like, oh, this person communicated in this way that made me uncomfortable. Okay, I'm not going to let in anybody who communicates in that way. Or like, oh, this person talked about sex in this way that I didn't like. Okay, I'm not going to let anyone who talks about sex in that particular way. That sometimes I see the more disappointment can sometimes nudge people's standards and expectations maybe higher than they actually should be because they're feeling a little sensitive and they're feeling hurt. Where, you know, people will match with someone on a dating app and then in two sentences, they're like, oh yeah, he talked about his job and I didn't like that he had that job, so I unmatched with him. Or like, oh, he asked how I was, but he didn't say anything interesting about my profile, so I unmatched with him. That there can be this weird hypersensitivity to someone who's not meeting expectations. And I can totally get how people don't want to waste their time and things like that, but I do see a lot of throwing the baby out with the bathwater is what I would say. And so I do think the light side of this is that by not holding out for the perfect person, you open yourself up to a lot more opportunity for connection.
Well, and who really is perfect out there, truly? You may have the best relationship and all of your friends envy it and you two may seem quote unquote perfect for each other, but I am certain that there are still things that drive the two of you up the wall about each other. You know, I'm not talking about the two of you specifically, but I'm talking about anyone out there who may have a seemingly perfect relationship. Perfection is not really possible, I think, in a relationship. There's always going to be things that you don't see that people are working on within the relationship. And I would hope that a partner would extend grace and understanding for my flaws. And if they are willing to do that for me, then I need to be able to do that for them as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that sometimes you have to shine a light on yourself that like you also aren't
perfect.
Maybe you may not be 100% perfect as far as partnership, right? Like you also are going to do things even early on in a relationship that maybe gives someone the wrong impression or sets off their red flag meter a little bit. And you may know, oh, no, this isn't something that's wrong about me. I'm a good partner. And you may want someone to stick with you a little bit longer and get to know you a little bit more before you're flat out rejected.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of a lyric from a song by Gregory Alan Isakov that says, if it weren't
boy.
For second chances, we'd all be alone.
Yes, my boy.
And that, it's hard, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yikes.
But yeah, I do think there's something to be said for no one's perfect. And if someone makes one mistake and then they're cut off, you would be alone, right? You would have nobody if that's how you were treated. And so, yeah, I think there's something to be said for making some allowances and saying, okay, yeah, like this person might not be perfect, or at least what I think is perfect right now. Because I think that's another piece is that you may find that actually this person is great, but you might have thrown them out over like Dedeker was saying, they had a job that someone else who I didn't like that relationship had that job too. So I think everyone with that job must be similar. Like that must be what attracts them to that line of work or something. So I'm going to throw them out when actually they might have been great. I think we can sometimes jump to thinking, oh, this was the problem, when maybe it's actually just the way they communicated or something else, but that you kind of tied to the fact that you would always fight about how much they had to work or something. And in this new relationship, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah. I always remember this particular section from The Ethical Slut, actually. They have this, it's not even a full chapter, it's like a little breakout section, almost like just an essay titled Clean Love. And it's very much rooted in this idea of meeting people where they are, not trying to change people, like finding a way to love someone as they are right in front of you today, in the present, in this exact moment, instead of bogging it down with the ways that you feel like they're not perfect necessarily, or the ways that you feel like maybe this relationship is not going to go in the direction that I thought that it was going to go. And it's very aspirational. I do whip out that essay and read it to myself sometimes if I'm feeling frustrated with a partner or feeling disappointed, as this reminder that, yes, I can bring myself back into the present moment to really try my hardest to love this person as they are without trying to get fixated on how I wish that they would change, or I wish that I could change them in some way. The Gottmans often mention this idea of the good enough relationship, that they're in this camp when it comes specifically to couples therapy, that we can't expect our partners to be the ones that solve all our childhood trauma. We can't expect that by going to couples therapy that we're always going to be able to tackle these very, very deep incompatibilities or resolve these ongoing issues. The Gottmans talk about how their standard is, can we at least get you to a relationship where you feel comfortable and happy sitting at a table together and sharing a cup of coffee and talking? And maybe that's good enough. Now, I'm not going to talk about my arguments against that, because we have a whole section in the episode to talk about arguments against that. But I think, honestly, when we were writing our book, I think I stumbled across this research study that showed that statistically, some of the healthiest and happiest relationships are among people who have found that there's some topics in their relationship that they just disagree on. There's some incompatibilities in their relationship that they just disagree on. And they have built skills around avoiding those topics, which to me, you know, initially my hackles were up, was like, what? Avoiding these topics and not talking about them? What? Like, that's not healthy. But it seems like there's something to be said about people who are able to accept, yeah, we're not always going to be on the same page. There are certain things that we mismatch on, and we've just learned to live with that and not dive into the mud every single day, locking horns, trying to fix that or resolve that. Like, we've learned to step around that. And I can imagine that maybe in some relationships, avoidance in that way would be really unhealthy. But I think in other relationships, that maybe I call it a skillful avoidance of the problem topics could really work for people.
Yeah, like that phrase, agree to disagree, I feel like gets thrown around a lot, and often in a somewhat sarcastic way at times, or in a passive aggressive way. But there is something there to say, here's an area where we just don't agree. We just don't see eye to eye. But it's not so fundamental that it's like I lose all respect for you because we disagree on this thing. And it's not so egregious that it's like, I'm miserable every day because of the way that this affects our life together, or the way it affects our relationship or our communication. As long as it's not those things, there is a certain, okay, I think you're wrong, but I can live with that, right? We can find a way to live with that. And that could be from tiny things of just, you like a genre of TV show or music that I just hate. We can, and everyone's like, oh, sure, whatever, no big deal, right? You watch that by yourself. Go watch that with your friends. I just don't want to watch that with you. Cool. Problem solved. I think there are times where we could apply that same thinking to something that might feel a little bigger, as long as it doesn't cross into that threshold of this is actively causing me suffering and pain and things like that.
so many of us expect that if we find the quote-unquote perfect partner, that means that they are going to agree with everything that we think, or that mm-hmm. their values will be similar enough to us that we just don't have those types of maybe existential conversations or existential disagreements. But I think it is going to come up, and many of us will date people that hold different religious beliefs or different political beliefs, and people find a way to make it work, and it really is possible.
The key word there, I think, is the enough.
Mm.
Like mm-hmm. you were saying, Emily, it's like if we're similar enough, if our values line up enough, and I think that that's sort of what all of this comes back to is the what is enough? How much does it have to be enough? How do we calibrate that?
Someone introduced this phrase to me. There's something about you're always going to have a sense of a cost of admission in yeah. a relationship, but it should feel like a small price to pay for the benefits and joy that you get from the relationship. And there was something about that that really clarified things for me, that you can still feel like there's a price to pay, but it feels small. It feels like you're getting a good deal. And I love a good deal.
She does. It's true. She loves a good
you
deal.
You do. You're good at thrifting.
Uh-huh.
Now...
Yeah, can we shift to talk about the shadow side of
I was
this
say,
line of thinking?
Yes. We probably have some people who've been listening to this and hearing us argue in favor of the light side and have been going, but what about, and I've honestly been feeling that even as we've been doing it ourselves. Because
we hear you.
Right? Mm-hmm. With all of this, no matter what side we're on, you're going to go, but that's not fair, that there's this exception on the other side. But this can lead to this bad thing. And that's kind of the whole point of the episode, is to explore the space. So please, with all of these arguments we're making, don't take that as one clip out of context by itself and say, see, Multiamory says this and this is the truth.
Yeah. But explore the space like we're
doing
on stage.
Right now.
We're
oh,
rehearsing
yes.
a Greek play.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, I love,
love
that.
It.
Okay.
Love it. So now it's time to rehearse the next act, which is the shadow side.
Yes.
I just want to share. When I was in college, one of my favorite plays I was ever in was a production of the Bacchae that was very much that movement based and rehearsal. We did a lot of exploring the space and a lot of contact improv.
I love that.
It was great. Yeah.
Wow. Fun. All right. So moving into the shadow side, we may be feeling if we settle, then we are settling for less than. And we may have lingering feelings of being unfulfilled. And we may even have a fear of missing out on a better relationship for us.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is a point at which if the relationship is not right for you, then these feelings start to creep in. And you start to ask yourself, how much time am I actually going to sink into this relationship? How much of my life and my happiness am I actually going to put into sustaining a relationship that isn't making me feel good?
And this thinking can come up not just for people who are in a monogamous relationship. This can come up if you're non-monogamous as well. It actually caught me off guard because I've experienced this while in a non-monogamous relationship. I think that we can internalize the sense of like, oh, well, if there's something else that you're longing for in partnership, you can always go date someone who might add that to your life. And that could be the case. But also, I know I've been in relationships where even though I'm non-monogamous, this particular relationship takes a certain amount of my time and my energy that could be spent on a better relationship.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Or with a better partner, that even though technically, I guess I could maybe go date someone to add into that, but maybe it's just not quite enough there.
Yeah, absolutely. That the compromising can lead us to feel like, okay, well, I've just got to keep putting effort into maintaining all these different relationships. And I think sometimes non-monogamy can even make this worse in some ways, where we think, oh, well, but I'm able to get my needs met elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a good reason to leave this relationship, and I shouldn't. I'm sort of failing if I did that. Mm-hmm. And so this compromising can come up in this negative way where we end up just spending so much of our energy on these relationships that aren't great for us. And honestly, a lot of the time, not great for the other person either. Mm-hmm. Even if we kind of feel like, oh, I'm doing a good thing by staying in a relationship, even if I'm not totally happy, I would argue that's really not doing a very nice thing for that other person either. Right? It's really not being nice to either of you. And focusing too much on that sense of, oh, but I need to have a really good reason not to be in this relationship. And if I don't have a good enough a reason not to be, then I should compromise and I should be here because that's the right thing to do. I think it can get us into that kind of thinking of like responsibility or duty rather than a joy. And maybe some people would argue, yes, that is what relationships should be. I think to bring it back to the Gottmans' good enough relationship, something to put in for context is the Gottmans are coming from a place of we're dealing with married couples and our whole goal is to keep these people married.
Sure.
Is that their whole goal? That's an interesting...
I think it has changed over time, but
they're fairly traditionally based.
Yeah.
They've got fairly traditional values. They're older. I think the organization as a whole is slowly catching up to the rest of the world, but from the start, right? A lot of their research is based around how do we keep a marriage together?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of marriage therapy and interventions for married couples are focused around that. We talk about that with research. A lot of research that's measuring how successful is such and such, the thing they measure to tell if it's successful is, did they stay together? And so I think when you're coming in with that bias, that can lead you to maybe compromising more than you would otherwise or prioritizing the relationship itself over the well-being of either of the people in it.
Exactly. Just those very fundamental differences in values, like if somebody wants monogamy or non-monogamy, or if, for instance, somebody has a sexuality that is not being expressed or explored because they're only with one gender, for instance, or specific dreams or aspirations that a person may have that they feel held back or tied down to the relationship, and that's not allowing them to pursue those things because they don't want to rock the boat or they don't want to harm the partner or harm their relationship.
Yeah, it's like we're starting to encroach in this idea of compromise that seeps into having to give up fundamental aspects of oneself or one's dreams or one's core values. And related to that can be feeling this need to swallow unacceptable behavior from a partner, because we can feel like maybe this is as good as it gets. Maybe this is as good as what I deserve. Or maybe I've worked so hard on this relationship and we're so entangled. And so I'm under an obligation to have to settle here and to have to compromise. I have to accept that my partner emotionally neglects me, or I just have to accept that there's an imbalance in the labor, whether that's emotional, domestic, or relationship maintenance labor. Like when I say a shadow side, I think there can be a really, really shadowy side to this, that all of our very well-meaning aphorisms about, you know, no one being perfect and not trying to change people and meeting people where they are can be this permission slip for truly accepting a lot less than what you deserve as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Not even what you deserve personally based on what you've done, but just as a human being, base level. Mm-hmm. What you deserve. I think a lot of us often settle for less than that in our relationships because of all this complicated stuff we've been talking about, these feelings of guilt or obligation or maybe I don't deserve better than that.
Yeah. And like, I'll never get anything better than this.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
On paper, at the very least, this person maybe makes a lot of money or has, you know, a good family or is impressive in other ways. And the two of you are fairly okay together. You're building a life together, perhaps, and you've sunk a lot of time and effort into the relationship. And just the prospect of doing that again, leaving a relationship in order to go through that process potentially again with another person or with multiple other people is daunting. And you may worry that it's never going to get better than this. So I think that it causes a lot of people to stay in relationships longer than they should.
Or if the sex is really good.
That too.
No, I've definitely done that one.
As literally,
really?
Yeah. Also my 70-year-old uncle shared with me, if the sex is really good, I just have a real hard time, you know, knowing if the person's actually right for me or not.
Okay.
Yes, Emily, that was how I reacted too.
Got it. Yep. Okay. There it is.
It was a great conversation to have over breakfast.
I am sure.
Amazing. All right. I think it's time for us to go to the next act of this rehearsal of our Greek play.
Yes.
I feel like this metaphor is getting away from me a little bit here.
No, it's perfect. Stick with it.
Okay, great. So as we're moving around the set pieces to set up for our rehearsal for act two here, we're going to take another moment to talk about supporting this show. If you value the content, really, it does go a long way to help us if you become a patron at patreon.com/multiamory. And there, of course, you can get some amazing things like our monthly video processing groups, which are a really cool in-person-ish way, right? In real time with voices and faces, to be able to share what you're going through and get support and maybe work through questions like this about, am I settling or am I setting too high of a standard? Helping to find that balance with people in real time can be really helpful. It's an awesome way to get support. And of course, take a moment, check out our sponsors. If any are interesting to you, if you use our promo codes, that does directly help support our show. So thank you so much. This episode is brought to you by Songfinch. Are you trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life? Perhaps someone for Mother's Day? And you're feeling overwhelmed? It's hard to find something that's interesting and great that won't just clutter up their house. Finding a unique gift can be challenging, but that's why we are so excited about our sponsor, Songfinch. It's such a cool, thoughtful gift that's easy and fun to make, tons of fun to make for somebody else and for them to receive, and you're supporting artists while you're doing it. I absolutely love it. Songfinch lets you create an original, radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. So I actually just created a new song for us recently. We did one a few months ago, and we made a second one. And I was able to go in and it walks me through the steps of talking about like the feeling and the genre of the song and let me pick out an artist based on a bunch of samples that they gave me. And I went for something different than we did last time, like a different style, just to see what that was like. And then based on that style, it actually helped inspire me to fill out the rest of the prompts about what I wanted it to be about, what the concepts were, what I thought was most interesting. And so I made a song about compersion because I thought that was a fun thing that there wasn't a lot of. And it was just really cool getting to put my ideas in there. And then less than a week later, had a song done that I could listen to and share with people.
Our last song, Don't Weaponize This Shit, was definitely more of a rockin' song. It was really up-tempo. This one is more, you know, I just want to sit down and relax with my partner, have some chill vibes, just sort of jam out to this kind of indie sort of fun song. It's really great. It's very catchy. The chorus gets stuck in your head. I love that about it. So with Songfinch, you can get a vinyl record of your song or one-of-a-kind art made from your lyrics, and you can even add your song to Spotify. So whether your song is for Mother's Day, Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, or a wedding, or just to show a loved one how much you care, you can start your song now to lock in a top Songfinch artist.
For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/multiamory and start your song. After your purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, which is a $50 value. Again, the URL is songfinch.com/multiamory, and don't forget to share your song with us, too. Songfinch, songfinch.com/multiamory.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
All right, Places, everybody, for rehearsal for Act 2.
Thank you, Places.
Thank you. Thank you,
Places. Places, so this Act 2 is titled Extreme Excellence. I'm trying to find another alliteration here.
No, okay, this is the thing. This act starts where the lights are down, and as the lights slowly come up, what the audience is hearing is, I'm holding up for a hero to the end of the night.
Yeah.
He's gotta be strong and he's gotta be fast and he's gotta be fresh for the fight. So it's holding out.
Love it.
Holding up for a hero is what we'll say.
You know what? I'll say, if anyone wants like a cool theme song to play along with this part of the episode, if you have a separate music player machine, I'd look up Hildegard von Bingen's version of Holding Out for a Hero. It's all done in like bardcore, like Renaissance sort of music style. It's pretty funny.
That's great.
Okay, but I don't mean actually holding out for a hero, but holding out for somebody who's a good match with you, holding out for somebody who shares your values, holding out for somebody who treats you well, holding out for somebody who feels like they can meet you as an equal. I think the thing that maybe we would all want in a relationship.
Yeah, this is difficult, I think, with a dating app. Now, the three of us have not ever really gone through the whole dating app thing to the degree that maybe some people have. Maybe the two of you do
maybe
a little bit more.
Maybe you should watch what you say.
Oh, okay.
Conflict, the rising tension.
I'm just saying that the three of us didn't meet, for instance, on a dating app.
We did, though.
On the website, but not on the app site.
Okay, so are you referring to like the dating carousel, perhaps?
Yes. That it's really difficult to get to know somebody and realize, like, yeah, they're an awesome match for me if you're just swiping right or left and have a couple of sentences about who they are.
Sure.
Even if you have a couple of paragraphs about who they are, it's still really difficult to know, is this person going to be good for me or not?
So
I think in the current landscape of dating, holding out for a hero can take a long time.
Yes.
Long time. Yeah.
But if we're focusing on the light side of this, I do think if we think about online dating, where compared to in-person dating, where you're limited by the people that you meet in your life, right? By the people that you happen to stand next to in line at the grocery store, or friends of your friends, or people who come to your friend's birthday party, or coworkers, or something like this, right? Like, you have to meet the person in real life somehow, which is inherently going to be a smaller number of people than you can swipe through in an app. But in person, there's a little bit of a sense of, if this person is somewhere in my sphere, maybe there's some things I already have in common, like a mutual friend or some sort of mutual interests, and that's how I met this person. Versus when we meet online, we don't necessarily have any of that. And so I could see an argument for, you do have to go through more in online dating because it's a more random pool, even though you have search filters and there's algorithms and things, but there's still just inherently a bit more of a wider net, a more randomness to it. And so I do think there can be an argument made for, they've got to pass a certain level of, yeah, okay, this really seems worth me investing more of my time to get to know this person.
There are a lot of skills that you're going to develop if you are going to choose to wait for kind of the quote unquote perfect partner. Like the skill of saying no, that's something that I haven't been great at in my life in general, but you probably get really practiced at it because there will be those people that come along that maybe are seemingly correct for you in various ways, but maybe not all the ways that you really want, or that don't line up value-wise in the way that you really are looking for. And so you can learn to say no to them and, you know, move on to the next person, whoever or wherever they may be.
I'd say another good side of this is that saying no doesn't necessarily have to be no to the person as a whole, but maybe saying no to a particular way that relationship could look. And doing that earlier on might end up letting you have a nice friendship together, where if you'd felt like, ooh, I can't do that, I should maybe just settle, like, I do like this person, so I should try to do this. And then you end up where it goes on for a while, eventually you can't keep doing it, you break up, and then there's a lot more pain there, and it's harder to move from there to a friendship, versus catching that much earlier on and going, I do like this person, but it's not quite enough for me to want to invest this heavily, but maybe it would be okay to do this. And I bring this up because I have had some good friendships that have come from one or the other of us making that call of like, this isn't, I'm going to say no early on, this shouldn't be this other thing. It's going to be a different type of relationship. And that's ended up being good. And that's ended up being a good friendship that I probably couldn't have had if one or the other of us hadn't made that call.
And when you do that, when you're able to make that call earlier on, when you're able to say no to the people or the relationships that you don't want, it does create more space for the people and the relationships that you do want to show up. Now, some people look at this through a very woo-woo lens of, you gotta attract the people to you who want the same things that you want. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's necessarily anything metaphysical going on here, but I do think that the more practiced you get at being able to compassionately and skillfully say no, to the not good options. And the more that you're able to skillfully lay out what it is that you are looking for and to take ownership of that and be honest about that, the more likely you are to find the people who want those same things, you know? Mm. And so, yeah, there's a certain amount of that holding out for a hero that if you do hold out and you're keeping that space open, it's maybe more likely that someone who really aligns with you might have the space to step into your life.
And that when you do have that person, that you have the space to let them in is maybe how I would put it.
That's
not
true.
Even so much about making energy outside of yourself in a metaphysical way, but just you'll be available. Again, with the non-monogamy example of if you're still putting a lot of energy and time into maintaining a relationship there, and then someone does come along that's interesting, but you're like, but I've just got so little time and I'm exhausted and I can't do this because you've been settling. So I could see that as a pretty compelling argument.
I've seen the argument made online that people who are very resolute in this way about what they want in partnership, they may be coming to the table with better conflict resolution skills already. That if you're already very comfortable with clearly stating what you want without it being a demand, but also without apologizing for it, that could be a really good foundation for negotiating a relationship from the beginning.
Hmm. Yeah.
I've also seen from somebody within our patron group who talks a lot about relationships on her Facebook, how she is choosing to not settle anymore and how much that has really helped her self-esteem and acceptance and values and know that this is something that she truly knows is right for her, that she's not going to settle for the wrong person in her life anymore. She's only going to be with people who affirm her and who affirm her choices. And I think that's really powerful and something that I hope I can do for myself as well.
Yeah, there's this really wonderful video that's an interview of Eartha Kitt. And as much as I would love to subject every human on the planet to this video, I'm not
going
to.
You sent it to me.
I did send it to you.
I was going through my breakup and I was like,
I watch it sometimes a couple times a year, depending on the year, to have a good reminder. But if you want to go watch it, just go to YouTube and search for Eartha Kitt Compromise, because she has this long conversation about compromise in relationship. But there's this really wonderful line that she drops where she says, I fall in love with myself and I want someone to share it with me. And I think that really gets to the heart of, again, the light side of this holding out, that I love myself enough and I love the things that I want enough that I'm going to wait until there's someone who wants to share that instead of I'm going to shrink myself. I'm going to bend myself in all these different ways. I'm going to try to make myself more attractive to somebody instead of waiting for someone who's already attracted to who I am and what I bring to the table.
And now at this moment in the play, the lights that have been shining from up above dim a little bit and lights down, like the footlights come up a little bit more.
Yeah.
So everything gets a little bit of a spookier sort of ghost story. Also,
this
I think some fog machines, you know, come on a little bit to give us a little bit of spookier ambiance. And maybe if we're in a high-tech theater, we've got some of those like rumbly speakers underneath the seats. So you get a sense of
very high-tech for a Greek play.
It's a high tech, sort of a new meets old kind of.
I love it.
A super modern staging.
What a director you are.
Yeah, yeah. And now we're going to look at the shadow side of having these high expectations or this camp of excellence and refusing to settle.
Yeah, I think this sort of thinking can lay the groundwork for some grass is greener mentality. You can always have this sense of, everybody else is having these great relationships and mine are just so-so, or I can only find people who are just so-so, and always looking outside of yourself as this basis of comparison and always feeling this sense of, oh, just it's never quite good enough. The relationship is never quite good enough.
Hmm.
In a more extreme version, this can intersect with what's known as relationship OCD. This is a relatively new, relatively unstudied spinoff of regular old-fashioned OCD, but the researchers are starting to identify as a little bit of a thing of someone who can never fully relax into their relationship. They're always worried that something's falling apart. This could be like I guess I would call them maybe over-maintaining a relationship, you know, obsessing a little bit too much about the communication or about ways that the relationship could be better. Again, like this obsessive focus that doesn't let you actually enjoy the relationship that you're in because you're always having the sense of, but it could be better or it could be more perfect.
Speaking of perfect, perfectionism is something that plagues many of us. It plagues the three of us. And I do think that often if you get in a situation where you maybe are with someone and want them to be better, then you can kind of pick at them, try to make them more perfect or more what you deem is going to be better for you or for them or the relationship in general. And that can be really detrimental. And also just internally, if you have a difficult time finding a partner because you're like, I have to find the perfect partner, that is what I should be looking for in my life. And you're always trying to find the best thing in the world. And it's just, it's pretty impossible.
Yeah, I think that this focus on, I need to find someone who lives up to my standards and that is, you know, truly the right relationship for me, the perfect relationship for me, can go a couple different ways. But one of them I've seen is it can lead you to then focus on any problems in the relationship is their fault, is because they're not good enough, and can actually lead to a lack of taking responsibility. I know it's going to surprise everybody, but weirdly, one of my favorite quotes from the Bible
I did not expect that.
I know no one saw that one coming, is from the Gospels. I forget. I think it's in Matthew. But Jesus talking about you want to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Meanwhile, you have a plank in your own eye. First, remove the plank from your own eye so that you can see clearly to remove the speck from theirs. And it's just this idea of it's so easy to criticize outside of yourself and not look internally at what might be going on for yourself because it's hard to see that. Right? It can be harder to see ourselves. So I think that's one direction that it can go there. So, you know, Bible quoting aside, I just think the point here is that there's clearly something to that truth that's been around for enough thousands of years that would have ended up in that book, but still feel relevant, where we can get focused on, I need someone else to solve all my problems. And so I'm not going to be accountable for them myself.
Sure. And some of this intersects with maybe what we see happening in the process of NRE starting to fade, that when we're in that chemical cocktail, new relationship energy, it's very easy to feel like, oh, I found the hero till the end of the night, that they are perfect and they are wonderful. And then once their humanity starts to come through, this feeling of, oh no, oh God, oh no, no, they're not perfect. Like, oh no, it's all going to fall apart. That sometimes I see people spiral into, oh no, it's actually horrible and I need to go chase the next NRE high with a new person. Because clearly this person wasn't it, now that they've shown me that they're an actual human being.
Right. I think it can lead to this catastrophizing too of, oh, I found this part of them wasn't as perfect as I thought. What else is there going to be? Like, oh, maybe everything that I thought I liked is a lie.
Oof.
Like we can kind of go swing really hard the other way.
Oof.
I've heard these very wild statistics, and who knows if they're real or not, but essentially saying things like the top 50% of women, or it's, maybe it's like even the top like 80% or 90% of women on dating apps are only looking at the top 10% of men.
It's a bullshit statistic.
It is made up
by a very scared and insecure man.
It's definitely, and it's always talked about by a man for sure.
Uh-huh.
But I do think that a lot of people out there believe that if you are a desirable person in whatever way, then, oh, you have so many different options and it's easier for you to be more choosy. And if for some reason I'm not a desirable person, then I have to settle more often. And that is probably a really challenging place to feel like you're in, just again, due to all of the bullshit from our society that is being thrown at us every single day.
So several years ago, and I know this was several years ago because it was at a time where I still felt it was worth my time and energy to get into arguments with strangers on the internet. I don't know how I came across this blog. Somehow it got served up to me, but it was this very long-running blog of a woman in the UK who, she wrote a lot about relationships and she wrote a lot about her personal stories, her personal experiences with dating. It seems like she'd been in the dating scene for a long time, trying to find a partner. And she was laying out this very complicated saga where she was dating a polyamorous guy for the first time. And she never experienced that before. And she also didn't have an interest in polyamory. So we can all see where this is going to go.
Good luck with that.
Yes, that she was going through a lot of pain. It sounds like he wasn't also great at it necessarily. She was not having a really good time. And I slid into the comments. A couple other non-monogamous people had also slid into the comments. So I felt a little bit backed up, but slid into the comments really to say, you probably shouldn't be dating this person.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you want are great, but like, this is not a good non-monogamy experience in general. And it's probably not going to end the way that you are. Clearly, it's not going to end the way that you're hoping to, because you're just really in a lot of pain. And she responded saying, yeah, I get what you're saying, but like, I have been lonely for so long and I've just been wanting someone who can touch me and be affectionate with me and go on dates with me. And I've been missing out on that for so long that this feels like it's the best that I got right now. And it was really sad to see that.
Yeah.
But I was like, but I get it. If you feel like you don't have a ton of options on your plate, you don't have the energy to hold out for someone who is a really good match for you or even a perfect match for you. Yeah. So I can totally get in this woman's experience that even though it was like so obvious to everyone on the outside, this is not going to work out. The two of you want different things. But when you're in it, that sense that this is what I got, you know, and I would rather lean into that and maybe try to get some of what I need rather than throwing it in the garbage.
So like, that's kind of, I think, the way you can end up there on the compromising side. But here's kind of an ironic roundabout way you can get there from the high expectations, like they have to meet all my standards way. And that is, you have this concept of, you know, they have to meet all of these things. And every time I have a bad experience, I add another criteria to the list, right? There's even a movement that there were several like blog posts about called haystack dating.
Oh, which, right.
I've never heard of that. What is that?
Burning the haystack, right?
Yes. Burning the haystack. And the whole idea is you want to find a needle in a haystack. The fastest way is to light the haystack on fire. So all the hay burns up and then you have a needle that's left. That's the thinking.
A burnt, charred needle.
A charred, hot needle.
Okay.
Then you got to sift through ashes to find a needle.
Right.
Good Lord.
So basically the whole philosophy there is you have your really high set of standards. And as you're doing online dating, if anyone fails any of the things, even once, you unlike them, block them, they're dead to you forever.
Good God.
And the idea is that you're quicker to just eliminate everyone so you're not wasting your time and you can find the good ones. That's the thinking. But the problem with the whole having these high standards, having this list thing is that, maybe eventually you did burn up that whole haystack and you have that needle. I've seen people where, I finally got the person that checked all the boxes on the list that I made. And I spent a lot of time really making and crafting that list. I finally found that person. And then they're not actually very happy with that person.
Yeah.
But they can't find a way to explain that because objectively they tick all of the boxes that they said that they wanted. And they can end up back in a compromising type situation, even though they set out to be on the other extreme of I'm not going to compromise at all. That it can end up holding you to this standard of these things I thought I wanted rather than, you know, being able to find the relationships that were actually good. And so it's almost like it goes in a circle and you can loop back around if you go too hard on one side.
Sure. Yeah.
So what do we think about all this? What camp are we in? Or is that kind of what we're even looking for here? Is the middle path as usual the best path? I think settling and staying in a relationship personally for me was definitely not the answer. And I knew that there was a tipping point at which it wasn't worth it to me to stay anymore. And yet I do think that it was okay that I stayed in it and tried at least for a while. Maybe I tried for too long, but you know, the jury's still out on that. But I definitely think that it's okay to at least give it a good college try in the relationship that you're in, especially if there are parts of it that really do work. But I guess it is that question of if you're looking for a relationship and if you currently are in one, where does that line get crossed into, you know what, it's time for me to cut and run, or it's time for me to decide I'm going to move on from this?
Well, I want to reserve the right to say something completely the opposite in a year or so of what I think right now.
Okay. Fine.
Okay. No, no. I just want to set up the expectation for myself that here's the deal is like, I'm in a place right now where I am not dating or trying to find somebody. I'm still recovering from ending a relationship. And I think that when I am ready to start dating, it's probably going to be looking for something very particular, like probably not looking for a super entangled life partnership sort of partner. And so I do think that my standards and expectations will be a little bit different, and also want to hold out for the fact that, like, once I'm actually in it, my feelings about this may change because we're bad at predicting how we're going to feel about things as human beings. But I think that I keep coming back to this sense of the small price to pay. This idea that nobody's perfect, no relationship is going to be perfect. Everybody at some point is going to trigger you, is going to disappoint you, is going to show their humanity in ways that turn you off. But ultimately, for whatever type of joy you're getting from the relationship, it should feel like a commensurate trade-off. It should feel like a small price to pay. It should feel like a good deal. And I know good deals.
Dedeker is the queen of good deals.
I think.
Well, yeah. And I think that's my takeaway every time this topic comes up on the show, because I feel like this whole debate is underlying a lot of the different things that we talk about on this show. A lot of the questions that people write into us, that some form of this question of what is good enough? Like, what's the enough of good enough? Is it too low? Is it too high? What is it? Or that sense of what cost is too high? And I think that it's really about evaluating that and adjusting that over time, like continuing to adjust your sense of what is the cost that feels like a good deal. And I would say maybe not even think like, oh, I want it to be cheap, but I want it to be a good deal. I want to feel like the cost is commensurate, right? It's like there's a difference between this deal's a little too good to be true versus this was a good deal, right? I think what I paid here is worth it. And I know we're being very capitalist about this metaphor here, but just the sense of, am I receiving enough back for the energy that I'm putting into this and what I'm giving? And I think that that answer may also change for you over time. Like Dedeker said, she wants to reserve the right to change her answer a year from now. I think that even just day to day, as our energy levels and our life circumstances change, your answer to what is enough or what is a good deal is going to change a little bit. And I guess what I hope that people can take away from this is the sense that this is an ongoing calibration process, that you're not going to just find the one aphorism that's going to work forever all of the time, or the one set of standards that's going to work all of the time for you or for anyone else, and that it's always going to be about refining it. And so I have a really cool but very elaborate ending to our Greek
play. Oh, I was going to ask.
Here. Oh, yeah. Shit. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so we had all these scenes, right? Maybe we'll think of it like four acts kind of, or two acts with two halves. I don't know how we'll go about that part. But then at the end, we have some of the characters and the chorus members who are, you know, costumed in a certain way to represent the light and dark sides of each of these. And they sort of spread themselves out on the stage, each saying things in defense of their way of thinking, you know, to kind of recap the various points that we've made and various arguments for each of these and against each of the others, things like that. And then, you know, we've still got some fog going on, whatever. And then we have to have a custom built building for this, because what happens next is that the lights come up in the house and two spotlights shine on two doors. And those are the exit doors.
Whoa.
And one of them says, the path of, you know, like holding out for excellence. And then the other one says the value of compromise or whatever it is. And the audience has to choose which one that they go through.
Oh, okay.
But here's the catch. Once you go through one of the two exits, there's another set of two doors with the same choice again. And then another one. And you've got like kind of a few of these.
Okay, so people, hold on. People sit through an entire play.
Yeah.
And then they got a lot of different.
It's sort of a labyrinth
to
get back out.
They have to go through a very elaborate immersive theater experience that happens after the play.
Uh-huh.
This is very straight no more.
Yeah.
The story's not finished just when we finish here, but actually we end up kind of mingling back through each other and making different choices.
Well, I was hoping for a more dramatic stage picture, and then the curtain comes crashing down, and then encore, encore.
That's because you're so traditional in the way you think about theater. I'm cutting edge here.
Oh, whoa.
Ooh,
and on that note.
On that note, we're going to fight about this later. All right, folks, if you go to our Instagram, which is at multiamory_podcast, you can answer our question of the week that's going to be on our stories, which is, what is okay to compromise on for the sake of finding partnership? Again, go to at multiamory_podcast to answer that question. Also, the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners about this episode is in the episode discussion channel in our Discord server, or you can post about it in our private Facebook group. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to multiamory.com/join. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.